Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 358, titled Mind Jihad, Part 6, Islamofascism and the Wahhabi Lobby. We're going to be taking a look at the influence of economics, in particular petroleum economics, and power politics, and not only American public opinion, but public opinion around the world. By the way, when I talk about Islamofascism, I don't want to be misunderstood, as I've said many times before, as characterizing Islam as fascist. That is not the case. But there is a very powerful element within Islam that is fascist. That is grouped around the Wahhabi sect, which in turn is based in Saudi Arabia, and in part due to the distorting effect not only on the world economy, but also on the economy and the religious aspects of the Middle East of petroleum wealth, Wahhabism has come to be elevated to a huge position. That also is due to the fact that both Mecca and Medina are in Saudi Arabia, but in turn, Wahhabism, or as some observers have classified it, Islamofascism, is a very, very powerful element, not only within the United States proper, but within the rest of the world. Not only is the influence there oil wealth per se, but also some of the economic ties connected with that, in particular American and other corporations that have very lucrative contracts of one type or another with Saudi Arabia and with other Middle Eastern oil-producing countries. And in turn, as the price of petroleum has gone up, in particular with the increase in oil prices in the 1970s, which in turn resulted in a global recession, capital flowing to the Middle East has increased enormously, and in turn, many countries, including and especially the United States, have actively courted many of the benefactors of that tremendous wealth to invest in American industries. When Crown Prince Abdullah, the heir apparent in Saudi Arabia, showed up down in Crawford, Texas, to take Crown Prince George Walker bin Talal Abdulaziz in hand, one should note that, as a number of papers did record, Saudi Arabia alone has hundreds of billions of dollars in assets invested in the United States. And in addition to the business relationships proper, a great many academic fellowships, a great many nonprofit organizations, which in turn have a huge effect on academia and public opinion, have been sponsored by oil wealth, and the poorer people have gotten, then the more significant that wealth has become. So the Wahhabi lobby and American public opinion will be a major focal point of this broadcast. And again, when I talk about Islamofascism, that is an Islamic form of fascism. I don't want to be misunderstood as characterizing Islam as fascist. By the way, this is being recorded on May 6th of 2002. The articles, the programs that I've done over the years are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. I will give you more information about that later in the program. They can be contacted at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email, mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com, and in particular on the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website, on which 2 half-hour segments can be heard each week. One can view long, detailed descriptions of the For the Record programs and the programs that I've done about September 11th, beginning with For the Record 325, have been reformatted to make them easier to read. These descriptions are detailed and annotated, and they are absolutely free. Look in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. There are also links within the For the Record section to 2 websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. These websites have virtually the entire For the Record series available for either download or streaming on Real Audio. More about that later in the program. Now, we're going to be taking a look, among other things, at the milieu of Altaqua. As we saw in For the Record 356 and 357, there are the most profound connections between not only the milieu of Al-Qaeda, but the milieu of Altaqua, and very, very powerful interests, not only a very, very strong foundation within the Borman organization that I've spoken about, but there are profound connections between the Republican Party and the Bush administration and the Altaqua slash Al-Qaeda slash Wahhabi lobby milieu that I have been speaking about for the last couple of weeks in particular, and that I'll be continuing with discussion about which I will be continuing with discussion about which this evening, improperly conjugated. One wants to note in particular the profound links between Altaqua and the Republican Party and some overlapping and very complex nonprofit organizations and Islamic charities and mutual funds, which are overlapping in terms of economic participation. They have interlocking directorates, and many of them also are geographically, physically located next to one another, and a lot of them do their financial transactions through some of the tax havens, such as the Channel Islands, the Cayman Islands, and the Isle of Man. In turn, many of those organizations, not only connected to terrorism but Islamo-fascist in nature, have to a large extent usurped or inherited the role of mouthpieces and opinion makers for the Islamic community, at least insofar as it has been represented in the United States. These organizations, as we looked at in the last 2 weeks, have strong connections to the Republican Party, to its ethnic outreach organization in particular, and to the Bush administration as well. They also have very strong connections to the Third Reich, the Underground Reich, as I have called it. And in turn, the concept of the Earth Island has been exploited by the Underground Reich. That is a huge landmass stretching from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way on across Europe, the former Soviet Union embracing China, India, the Middle East. And that huge landmass and the control thereof was seen by the Third Reich as the key to world domination. They called it the Earth Island. Across the middle of it is a huge swatch of Muslim population, or a huge group of Islamic peoples, and also overlapping those Islamic peoples is most of the world's petroleum reserves. So controlling that and controlling the Islamic peoples of the world, Arabs in particular, was seen as the key by the Third Reich's geopoliticians to world domination. That is true in the post-war period. We're going to be taking a look at some of the propaganda aspects right now. Reviewing an element that we looked at in the San Francisco Chronicle, this appeared in the Chronicle on March 12th of 2002. On page A12, we find the following article by Jay Bushinsky of the Chronicle Foreign Service, headlined "Swiss Probe Anti-U.S. Neo-Nazi," subtitled "Suspected Financial Ties to Al-Qaeda." This deals with, among others, Ahmed Huber of Altaqua slash Nada Management, Dateline Bern, Switzerland, and Ahmed Huber was quoted in an interview by the Chronicle as follows, quote, "The U.S. is the ally of 15 million Jews against 1.3 billion Muslims. It is allied with 5 million Israelis against 200 million Arabs," he said, again quoting, "We will bring down the Israel lobby and change foreign policy. We'll do it in America. When it happens, you'll understand." Unquote. And we're going to be taking a look at how the Wahhabi lobby, again, with very, very profound connections to corporate America, with very profound connections to corporations around the world. The Kuwaiti Investment Authority alone owns 7%, a minority controlling interest in Daimler Chrysler. The 7%, by the way, is a lot in a major corporation. You sell that stock, you drive down the stock, you can control a corporation even with a minor interest. Kuwait is a tiny country, but very powerful because of the oil wealth. By way of looking at the Islamo-fascist Wahhabi lobby usurping not only of elements of public opinion, but in particular something that has been noted by many Muslim critics, the way in which the distortion of Islamo-fascism slash Wahhabism has enabled, and that to a certain extent at least, to a large extent, the result of petroleum wealth and geopolitics, the extent to which that has enabled many of these Islamo-fascist elements, including, as we shall see, elements connected to terrorism and to the Muslim Brotherhood, and as we have seen, connected to the underground Reich through the Al-Taqwa/Nada management milieu, and to the GOP, these elements have to a large extent usurped what is being viewed as Islamic public opinion, in turn through some of the global mass media that have been accessed in the Islamic and Arab worlds. They have had a relatively incendiary effect in that part of the world as well. Following articles from the Wall Street Journal on Wednesday, May 1st of 2002, an article by Glenn R. Simpson headlined, U.S. charges Islamic group head lied under oath on terror probe. And this concerns an organization called Benevolence International. This particular Islamic charity, like many other Islamic charities, although it does apparently serve charitable functions and has apparently duped many well-meaning Muslims into contributing to it as a result, it also has been abused as a front for terrorism and for Al-Qaeda in particular. This is Dateline Washington. It reads in part as follows. Providing a new window into the government's probe of the use of charitable groups to finance terrorism, the Justice Department filed perjury charges against a Chicago-area Islamic welfare group and its head, alleging he lied under oath in March when he denied involvement in terrorism. The 35-page Federal Bureau of Investigation statement of allegations, which grew from a Little Watch civil case, is among the most detailed filings the U.S. government has made against suspected Al-Qaeda associates in this country, and provide substantial new information about the investigation of Islamic terrorism following the September 11th attacks. Skipping down. Benevolence International was founded in the 1980s by Sheikh Abdul Bataji, a wealthy Saudi whom the FBI identifies as a bin Laden associate and a supporter of Islamic rebels in Afghanistan. Mr. Arnaut, A-R-N-A-O-U-T, that's Enam Arnaut, and I'm not sure about the pronunciation, capital E-N-A-A-M, capital A-R-N-A-O-U-T. Mr. Arnaut later became head of the group, and in the early 1990s, several al-Qaeda members came to hold positions in BIF. One witness said, BIF was used in the early 1990s by Osama bin Laden as a means to transfer money to bank accounts generally held by purported relief organizations in countries where al-Qaeda members or associates were conducting operations, unquote. Another witness claimed Mr. Arnaut was, quote, an administrator, unquote, for Mr. bin Laden in the 1980s during the Afghan-Soviet conflict. Mr. Arnaut was linked to Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, the radical Islamic warlord with alleged ties to Al-Qaeda, and the 1993 World Trade Center bombers. He appears with Mr. Arnaut in a videotape obtained by the FBI. Other evidence ties Mr. Arnaut to Mamdou Salim and Mohammed Jamal Khalifa, two alleged Al-Qaeda leaders. By the way, Khalifa is one of the former brothers-in-law of Osama bin Laden and an individual who was alleged in the book Dollars for Terror to have been brought to the United States under the auspices of the petroleum faction of U.S. intelligence, which was utilizing Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden for its own geopolitical purposes. I believe that ultimately that same milieu, in turn, with a very, very powerful fifth column in the United States, then turned literally with a vengeance on the United States in a Pearl Harbor-style terrorist attack, and that the United States is not only at this point being subverted, rather like France in the pre-World War II and World War II periods, it is not only being subverted by a foreign power, but that entails the collaboration of a very powerful fifth column within the American political, economic, and national security establishments, and that we literally face a conquest by a hostile foreign power. Now, I suspect that the ultimate method of conquest will be economic, and I think we are now between the proverbial Iraq and a hard place. If we do not defend ourselves militarily and politically, then we will literally be physically destroyed. If we do defend ourselves, and if we do so unintelligently and spend tons of money on ridiculous weapon systems, including a missile shield, then we will be bankrupted economically. Oddly enough, I think the key to a successful defense of this country and its values will be the removal of George Bush and the Republican Party, particularly the negating of the Republican tax cuts, which will destroy the United States economically. It will destroy the United States by adding to an already unsustainable current accounts deficit. We face a future very much like that of Argentina if we don't. Nonetheless, as I've said in the past, I strongly support the war, although I think that George Bush and Al-Qaeda are part of the same milieu. That milieu is fascist. It is Islamo-fascist on the Al-Qaeda side and just plain fascist on the Bush side. More about Mr. Arnaut, this so-called philanthropist. This from the New York Times of Wednesday, May 1st of 2002. This is an article by Neil A. Lewis. This is Dateline Washington, April 30th. And headline, Leader of Islamic Charity is Accused of Lying to Court. Subtitled, U.S. says man spent money to Al-Qaeda. Skipping down. Speaking of Benevolence International, some of the information about the charity and Mr. Arnaut, according to the papers filed today, was also obtained in a March 19th raid of the foundation's offices in Bosnia. Investigators found guns and military manuals, as well as photos of bin Laden and of Mr. Arnaut, quote, handling rifles, a shoulder-fired rocket, and an anti-aircraft gun, unquote. That certainly sounds charitable to me. By the way, Mr. Hekmatyar, also associated with this milieu, is not only associated with the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, it's a very, very powerful drug dealer in the Afghan milieu. Now, in terms of understanding the Wahhabi lobby and the manipulation of American public opinion by the Wahhabi lobby slash Islamo-fascist milieu, bear in mind what Ahmed Huber, a protege of Johann von Leers, Goebbels, chief of anti-Semitic propaganda, bear in mind what he said about changing American public opinion in the United States. We're going to take a look now at the spin being put on the arrest of Mr. Arnaut and Benevolence International by the Council on American-Islamic Relations. That's an organization that we took a look at last week. We're going to review some information about that, taking a look not only at its connections to the Al-Qaeda milieu, but also its apparent connections to the Muslim Brotherhood as well. L.A. Times of Wednesday, May 1st of 2002, had the following article by Josh Meyer and Eric Lichtblau. It's Dateline, Washington. Its headline, Charity Leader Funded Terror, U.S. Alleges. And this deals with Benevolence International, Mr. Arnaut, etc. But listen to the spin being put on this particular individual and milieu. This appears to be characteristic, and it should be noted. Speaking of the crackdown on some of these Islamic charities which have been abused for the purposes of terrorism, according to numerous reports. It also infuriated Islamic leaders in the United States who said Arnaut's arrest fits a pattern of Justice Department harassment against Muslims since the September 11th attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Quote, if you've got evidence of him having breakfast with Osama bin Laden, then charge him with terrorism, not perjury, said Ibrahim Hooper, a spokesman for the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Quote, bring the evidence into court and let him rebut it. Unquote. Well, there does appear to be a fair amount of evidence, judging from the press accounts. I would also note that with regard to counterintelligence, one doesn't necessarily allow spies and people connected with a military organization to examine all of the field intelligence. It's one of the things that makes this whole situation very dicey. In terms of successfully negotiating what is literally a military conflict, but which is being waged by irregulars and largely through intelligence and economic matters, or means, one should say, other means, one can undermine one's constitutional foundation on the one hand, or one can simply be destroyed on the other. And depending on how successfully the U.S. can negotiate this, well, I think the future, quite simply the future of the society, will depend on that. And it may depend, too, on how willing Americans of all stripes, including Muslim Americans, are willing to tell the truth about institutions like the Council on American-Islamic Relations and also the Islamo-fascist slash Wahhabi slash Al-Qaeda connections to the Republican Party and the Bush administration, which could not be exaggerated in importance. Tuesday, April 30th of 2002, the San Francisco Chronicle had the following article. This is a Washington Post story by Dan Egan and Catherine Shaver, and this alluded to a number of incidents in which Saudi and/or Pakistani flyers were rerouted to other flights and taken off planes at the discretion of some of the pilots. This article is headlined, Incidents on Flights Cause Post-September 11th Jitters. And in one case, for example, three Saudi men who had no luggage were pulled off a flight, a Delta flight at Dulles Airport for questioning. And in other cases, a group of Pakistani musicians were rerouted on separate flights because the pilot did not feel comfortable with these individuals flying on their plane, in particular in light of recent alerts about terrorism and with the inflaming of the situation in the Middle East. But notice who acts as the spokesperson here for the American Islamic community and for the Islamic community in general. Skipping down on the story, Mohammed Nimer, N-I-M-E-R, research director for the Council on American-Islamic Relations, said most of the discrimination cases reported to the council involved, quote, outright prejudice, unquote. Again, quoting, there's no other way to put it, unquote, Nimer said. Some people are not comfortable flying in an airplane that has people of Middle Eastern, Arab, or Muslim backgrounds, unquote. Well, I think there are reasons why people in general would feel jittery about someone of that background. That is not necessarily bigotry, but it's just plain old-fashioned fear. And I don't think people necessarily should complain about that as discrimination. If you basically dismiss somebody from their job simply because they have an Islamic background, that could be viewed as discrimination. There do appear to have been some questionable uses of law enforcement by Attorney General John Ashcroft, which should come as no surprise, including to many of the Muslims who helped to elect George Bush. I'm afraid I don't feel a lot of sympathy. A lot of people were warning about the fascist nature of the Bush administration to come, and many of the elements associated with it. John Ashcroft is a domestic fascist and has a pretty overt background in that regard. But an awful lot of people, including the Ralph Nader forces, said there's no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. Well, you make your bed, and then you lie in it one way or another. We're going to turn now to an article which discusses some of the people involved with the Council on American-Islamic Relations. And I would note, again, the profound connections between the CAIR, the Islamo-fascist slash Wahhabi lobby, and the Bush administration. And last week, we took a look at the strong connections between this milieu and the milieu of al-Qaeda. There are at least four direct elements of intersection between the milieu that was targeted in the March 20th Operation Green Quest raids and the Republican Party's ethnic outreach organization, including a guy named Talat Otman, who delivered a benediction at a Muslim benediction at the Republican convention. He also was a member of the board of directors of Harkin Energy, George W.'s one of his oil ventures, and a good friend of the Bush administration. Again, there's strong elements of overlap between al-Taqwa and the Bush administration, and as we've looked at, al-Taqwa would appear to be a direct extension of the underground Reich and an institution heavily involved in September 11th and other activities as well. More about al-Taqwa later. Now, note again the extent to which the Council on American-Islamic Relations has come to be a spokesperson for, or mouthpiece, a PR organization for not only the American Islamic community, but the Islamic community around the world, and how it would appear to be couching very legitimate fears about terrorism and basically flacking for terrorist organizations, hiding in some cases successfully behind the rubric of civil rights. Following article is from the New Republic, and this can be accessed from the New Republic online from November 12th of 2001. The article is called Fevered Pitch by Franklin Foer, F-O-E-R, and it talks about the profound connections between the Wahhabi lobby and Islamofascism, as I call it, and the Republican Party, including the CAIR. Skipping down. The record of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, or CAIR, which, like the American Muslim Council, sends members to meetings organized by GOP operative Norquist and Safouri, is no more encouraging. When interviewed by Salon's Jake Tapper on September 26th, CAIR Communication Director Ibrahim Hooper. He's the individual who was flacking for Benevolence International, beginning again. When interviewed by Salon's Jake Tapper on September 26th, CAIR Communication Director Ibrahim Hooper refused to condemn Osama bin Laden. CAIR founder Nihad Awad, who appeared with George Bush at the Washington Islamic Center on September 26th, has argued that, quote, "There is ample evidence indicating that both the Mossad and the Egyptian intelligence service played a role in the 1993 World Trade Center explosion," unquote. And Siraj Wahaj, who has served as a CAIR board member, has been described by federal prosecutor Mary Jo White as a possible conspirator in the 1993 bombing, parenthetically, of the World Trade Center. Next, I want to note that a number of Islamic scholars, and an example that we're going to look at in a minute, an imam of the Italian Muslim community, have complained vociferously and lamented the fact that CAIR is an organization that is coming to be able to speak in the name of the Muslim community. Continuing with the New Republic article. As Harvard professor of Islamic studies Ali Asani has complained, quote, "There is general concern among Muslim intellectuals about how not only CAIR, but some of these other organizations are claiming to speak in the name of the Muslim community, and how they're coming to be recognized by the government as spokespeople for the Muslim community in the U.S., unquote. And still more about the CAIR. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from an internet site which is called the Root and Branch Association Limited. This is an Islam-Israel fellowship, and it basically has not only commentary but dialogue, including fielding online questions. The two co-chairpersons here are Sheikh Professor Abdul Hadi Palazzi, the Muslim co-chairman, and Dr. Asher Adair, the Jewish co-chairman. Their website, www.rb.org.il/Islam. This article is called In Defense of Stephen Emerson and Daniel Pipes. Daniel Pipes, a former Reagan administration official, very conservative, but with some pretty intelligent things to say about Islamic terrorism. Stephen Emerson, a person for whom I have much more respect, is a person who, that's not to say I don't think Pipes, some of what he's had to say about the Middle East is worthwhile, is not an individual whose politics I generally agree with, but that's true of a lot of people these days. Stephen Emerson has done some very good work, including a sadly overlooked book called The American House of Saud, called The Secret Petrodollar Connection, which deals with some of the political implications of this recycled petroleum wealth. This article, In Defense of Stephen Emerson and Daniel Pipes, by Sheikh Professor Abdul Hadi Palazzi, the Secretary General of the Italian Muslim Association and an imam in the Italian Islamic community. And of the CAIR, he says, noting its connections with, among other institutions, the Muslim Brotherhood, "Hisham Kabbani correctly identifies the origin of contemporary radicalism in Wahhabism. Kabbani correctly divides contemporary radicals into two groups, militants," unquote, "those who directly engage in terrorism, and non-militants," unquote, "those who indirectly support terrorism while maintaining a false respectability so that they can get invited to receptions at the White House, i.e. the wolves in sheep's clothing. I agree with Mr. Kabbani 100% on this issue. I would also add that the center of worldwide radicalism is a sect called the Muslim Brotherhood. This sect has sections engaged in direct terrorism such as Hamas, and sections not directly engaged in terrorism such as CAIR. Although their links to Hamas are clear, CAIR is permitted to act freely in the United States. CAIR claims to represent," unquote, "the Muslim community, and launches hate campaigns against journalists, senators, and others who interfere with their true terrorist agenda. Let us look at CAIR's carryings on during the past few years. I received all of their press releases." We're going to continue right where we left off at the end of side one. This is with a discussion on a website called the Root and Branch Association Limited, an Islam-Israel friendship co-chaired by Sheikh Professor Abdul Hadi Palazzi, the Muslim co-chairman, and Dr. Asher Eder, E-D-E-R, the Jewish co-chairman. This can be accessed at the website www.rb.org.il/Islam-Israel. The full web address will be on the description, which will probably be on the Spitfire website by midweek, perhaps probably by the evening, by May 8th. Of 2002. Now, on this website, there is an article by Sheikh Professor Abdul Hadi Palazzi, the Secretary General of the Italian Muslim Association, and also an imam with the Italian Islamic Community. It's called In Defense of Stephen Emerson and Daniel Pipes. And specifically, Sheikh Palazzi has some very interesting things to say here about the CAIR, which we looked at inside one of this program, and the connections between that organization and the Al-Taqwa Milieu were examined in, for the record, 357. Now, Sheikh Palazzi, in this discussion, links the CAIR with the Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamo-fascist organization that we have looked at in the past. Basically, Sheikh Palazzi maintains that this organization, in effect, sort of runs PR interference for elements associated with the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood emphatically denies involvement in terrorism. There is considerable evidence to the contrary. The Muslim Brotherhood has an historical relationship with international fascism. We've looked at it in many broadcasts, including and especially, for the record, 343, number 354, number 351 as well. Of the CAIR and the Muslim Brotherhood, Sheikh Palazzi states, "I would also add that the center of worldwide radicalism is a sect called the Muslim Brotherhood," unquote. This sect has sections engaged in direct terrorism such as Hamas and sections not directly engaged in terrorism such as CAIR. Although their links to Hamas are clear, CAIR is permitted to act freely in the United States. CAIR claims to represent, unquote, the Muslim community and launches hate campaigns against journalists, senators, and others who interfere with their true terrorist agenda. Let us look at CAIR's carryings on during the past few years. I receive all of their press releases. And skipping down, after discussing some of their attacks and his own differences with them, and again, he is an imam with the Italian Muslim community, according to the con artists at CAIR, anyone who denounces Islamic radicalism is Islamophobic. CAIR cares to attack Mr. Emerson and Dr. Pipes because they are revealing the true radical agenda, as well as revealing the connection between CAIR and those organizations that are classified as terrorist by the United States law. And one of the things that he points out is that this basically, characterizing anti-terrorist elements in this fashion, the CAIR is basically able to get invited to the White House, as he notes here, as Sheikh Palazzi notes. Hisham Kabani correctly identifies the origin of contemporary radicalism in Wahhabism. Kabani correctly divides contemporary radicals into two groups: militants, those who directly engage in terrorism, and non-militants, those who indirectly support terrorism while maintaining a false respectability so that they can get invited to receptions at the White House, i.e. the wolves in sheep's clothing. I agree with Mr. Kabani 100% on this issue. And bear in mind, too, the observations in that we looked at in the first part of the program by Harvard Professor of Islamic Studies Ali Assani. Now, we're going to take a look at the milieu of Al-Taqwa and Al-Qaeda, and in particular, NADA Management. Now, this is an organization that we've spoken about many times in the past, and in particular, note the observations by Sheikh Palazzi that the CAIR is connected to the Muslim Brotherhood. That's an institution that we've looked at many times in the past. We're going to turn to a discussion of members of the Muslim Brotherhood, and I think this goes directly to the substance of what is really so sensitive about this entire issue, namely the cloaking of civil liberties / civil rights and alleged discrimination. The cloaking, basically, of Islamo-fascism and terrorism, within that rubric. And it should be noted that basically democracy and civil liberty should be preserved, but they can also be abused. In particular, Joseph Goebbels was quite frank about stating that Nazis would, the Third Reich, that National Socialism would use democracy and a free press to gain power, but that they would not allow others to use those same vehicles to oppose them. In that context, and in the context of the allegations by Sheikh Palazzi and others about CAIR, and note the profound connections between CAIR and the Republican Party, we're going to turn again to the book Dollars for Terror by Richard LaBeviere, subtitled The United States and Islam. This book was published in soft cover by Algora Publishers. You can visit their website at www.algora.com. The ISBN number is 1-892-941-06-6. And this book was published in 1999 in French. It was translated by Martin Demer and published in English in the year 2000. We're going to review an element of the discussion concerning the Muslim Brotherhood, again, apparently connected to CAIR, which certainly overlaps the Al-Taqwa milieu. It is certainly an important part of the Wahhabi lobby, and in turn, the CAIR-Al-Taqwa milieu has the most profound connections with the Republican Party's GOP, the Republican Party's Ethnic Outreach Organization, which in the past has served as a repository for Third Reich elements. Those in turn evolved into a profound, literally fascist-slash-Nazi element of the Republican Party. So the discovery that Islamo-fascist elements would be taking their place in the GOP ethnic outreach organization alongside the Iron Guard, the Bulgarian National Front, the Croatian Ustashi, Ukrainian and Baltic Muslim, or Ukrainian and Baltic Waffen-SS units, including at least one Belarusian SS intelligence unit that was brought complete and intact into the United States, well, this should not come as a great surprise. Please note that the Crusade for Freedom, the illegal domestic intelligence organization under which these European Nazis and fascists were brought into the United States, was run by people with strong connections to the Bush milieu. The Crusade for Freedom was run by Alan Dulles, who advised the Bush family's Third Reich investments. Its spokesperson was Ronald Reagan. The person who handled the Crusade for Freedom was Richard Nixon, who was credited by the elder George Bush in his autobiography with being his political mentor. The elder George Bush incorporated the Nazis into a formal branch of the Republican Party under Richard Nixon when the elder Bush was chairman of the Republican National Committee. And William Casey, the chairman of the Reagan-Bush campaign in 1980 and then director of the CIA, handled the State Department machinations to bring these Nazis and fascists into the United States in the first place. They then became an important element of the Republican Party. They have apparently been joined by the Islamo-fascists. Now, again, CAIR and the Muslim Brotherhood. And in turn, we're going to be taking a look at the Ramadan family. That is Saeed Ramadan, and who was the son-in-law of Hassan al-Banna, the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood. We're going to be taking a look at basically Hani Ramadan and Ramadan Tariq. Those are the two sons of Saeed Ramadan, who we looked at in For the Record 343. We came back to him in For the Record 350 and number 351. Now, bearing in mind the CAIR and their usurpation, other organizations with strong connections to Islamo-fascism, bear in mind their usurpation of the position of spokespersons or mouthpieces for the Muslim community, not only in the United States, but elsewhere, and consider basically what the Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamo-fascist organization alleged by Sheikh Palazzi to be connected to CAIR. Let's listen to basically how they were choosing to operate in Europe. Referring to Hani Ramadan, the author of Dollars for Terror, Richard LaBeviere writes, "His various activities have led to many, quote, conferences, unquote, at the Islamic Center of the OVIV, that's in Geneva, Switzerland, where in recent years many demonstrations and open-air prayer sessions have been held for various Islamist causes in front of the European seat of the United Nations. Quote, The advantage of our presence in Europe, unquote, Hani Ramadan says, again quoting, is that we can take advantage of the freedom of the democratic regimes, unquote. That sentence again. The advantage of our presence in Europe, Hani Ramadan says, is that we can take advantage of the freedom of the democratic regimes, unquote. I think one can safely extrapolate from Hani Ramadan's statements about Europe to those of the United States as well. And again, it's important to preserve civil liberties. On the other hand, it's also important to fight fascism. And one should consider very carefully whether organizations like CAIR and some of the other elements of the Wahhabi lobby, these other Islamo-fascist organizations, should on the one hand be allowed to speak for Muslims in the United States and worldwide, and whether they should also be allowed to cloak pro-terrorist activities and Islamo-fascist activities with the facade of civil rights and civil liberties. Civil rights are important to maintain, but if past a point, if we give the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda, Al-Taqwa, Ahmed Huber and the heirs to François Genoux, if we give them liberty, they'll give us death. Continuing with this text by Richard Labeviere, for example, on March 11, 1995, Hani Ramadan spoke at a gathering that was officially organized by the Algerian FIS. The demonstration, in fact, brought together the European supporters of the Armed Islamic Groups, or GIA, and the center directed by Ramadan, which has enough meeting space for some 20 people, is also used as a hub for the European representatives of various organizations that are under surveillance by several European police forces. And that is very interesting indeed. And again, that book, that excerpt from Dollars for Terror by Richard Labeviere, a book that we've looked at many times in the past. Now, bearing in mind the Muslim Brotherhood's profound connections to Al-Taqwa slash Al-Qaeda, or Al-Taqwa slash NADA management, that is an extremely complex organization alleged in the San Francisco article of March 12th to have been founded by François Genoux. We discussed that in, for the record, 352. We're going to take a look now at an article that was posted on a website that deals with the Swiss financial industry. This website is www.swissinfo.ch from September 26th. Of 2001. This article is from the Keystone Archive. It's headlined, Switzerland Confirms Role in U.S. Anti-Terror Probe, subtitled, A Swiss Government Agency Has Requested Information on the Al-Taqwa Management Company in Lugano. Again, the website, www.swissinfo.ch, September 26th of 2001. Skipping down, speaking about Al-Taqwa, Al-Taqwa had been certified by the Swiss Federal Banking Commission last year to be neither a bank nor a financial intermediary. In other words, to fall outside the country's money laundering control mechanisms. But reports in Blick, that's B-L-I-C-K, and other Swiss media, allegedly based on Foreign Secret Service reports, suggested last week that millions of bin Laden's funds had been moved through Al-Taqwa. Again, note here that the Swiss Federal Banking Commission had certified Al-Taqwa to be neither a bank nor a financial intermediary. In analyzing Al-Taqwa, which had enormous financial assets, many people have noted that it, although it was apparently very powerful, and it was described by people such as Ahmed Huber as having very, very powerful Saudi backers, that the enormous funds at the disposal of Al-Qaeda slash NADA, or Al-Taqwa rather, slash NADA management were apparently being moved around the world with relative secrecy, that in places Al-Taqwa was nothing more than an address and an account number. We have noted in the past, specifically in For the Record 356 and 357, the links described by European money laundering expert Ernest Backes, who helped to set up the Clearstream network, now owned by the Deutsche Börse. Ernest Backes basically said that Clearstream and allegedly François Genoux had the most profound connections, not only to the funding of September 11th, but apparently Clearstream and Altaqua and the Banco del Gotardo had profound links as well, not only according to Ernest Bacchus, but others. I realize these names are not necessarily the most familiar to members of the listening audience. They sure as hell aren't exactly household words. That's why the research is being done, and that's also why I'm pedantically accessing the sources. Please utilize the descriptions on the Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com. All of the programs about September 11th have been reformatted. That's For the Record 325 on up. Even if you're not online, you can go to a library and have a librarian print them up for you. We're going to be taking a look at Altaqua slash NADA Management, alleged in a Chronicle article to have been founded by François Genoux, alleged by many, and apparently with strong documentation, to be connected to the Clearstream Network, in turn connected to BCCI and other elements, Altaqua, and the Banco del Gotardo with strong connections. And please note that this very complex milieu, in turn, has the most profound connections to the GOP and to the Bush administration, in particular to the GOP ethnic outreach organization. We're going to take a look now at an article. This appeared on a website, Studien von Zeit. This is the Studien von Zeitfragen, and this is from the Jahrgang Internetsausgabe number 2001, basically the internet yearbook. This is volume 35, Jahrgang Internetsausgabe 2001. The full web of the web address www.studienvonzeit, and the full web address rather will be on the Spitfire website. It's long and involved, and I don't think it's necessarily going to make the best radio to read the whole URL online. This is a rather complex radio, I guess one could say at best. This article, again from the Studien von Zeitfragen, 35 Jahrgang Internet Ausgabe 2001. This article is called "The Politics of Three: Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and Israel." It's authored by Paul W. Rasha and is subtitled "Subversive Money." Now, of the Altaqua Al-Qaeda milieu, we read, and but note here not only the role of Prince Turki, a member of the Saudi royal family, and the former chief of Saudi intelligence, who after 20-plus years was replaced as the chief of Saudi intelligence the week before the September 11th attacks. Note here that Prince Turki apparently was connected to the Altaqua milieu, and note here that it is that apparently Yosef Nada, the head of Altaqua and NADA management, settled in, basically moved to Saudi Arabia in 1970, made contacts with the Saudi royal family, apparently worked with Prince Turki, who was alleged in the book Dollars for Terror to have basically run bin Laden and Al-Qaeda for Saudi intelligence. And note the Muslim Brotherhood, Altaqua, Yosef NADA, Saudi royal family links that are alleged here. Turning once again to The Politics of Three: Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and Israel by Paul W. Rasha, R-A-S-C-H-E, we read, skipping down, "The role of Saudi Arabian wealthy families in secret funding of Al-Qaeda and other Islamist terror organizations has to date been kept deliberately in the background by Washington, largely out of sensitivity to the precarious internal situation in Saudi Arabia itself. King Fahd is near death, and his designated successor, Crown Prince Abdullah, is known to be more actively hostile to American foreign policy and more sympathetic to militant Wahhabite clerical Sunni currents in the Islamic world. In the succession process now underway, the crucial question is whether moderate voices within the royal family will be given significant policy posts or not. Washington knows well that a head-on clash with the Saudi royal house at present would serve the interests only of the radical faction inside the royal family. A major strategic goal of the Al-Qaeda terror attacks, including inside Saudi Arabia itself in recent years, has been to escalate the pressure on the Western corrupt, unquote, elements of the Saudi royal house with the aim of replacing them with fanatical feudalist Wahhabite elements, a kind of Talibanization of the Saudi kingdom. The internal Saudi situation is complicated by the fact that many very wealthy Saudi families financially support the al-Qaeda effort as part of a strategy of purging the Saudi kingdom of infidelism and Western corruption. In many cases, these influential Saudis reach into the extended royal family, including the murky figure of recently fired Saudi intelligence chief Turki al-Faisal, son of the late King Faisal. By the way, we took a look at his removal the week before September 11th and for the record 334 and 337, among other broadcasts. Continuing. In this regard, an extremely important step in the international effort to cut off the financial tentacles of the Islamist terror apparatus took place on November 7th. By the way, this article was published in 2001. That day, a coordinated governmental shutdown of Hawala operations from Boston to Lugano, Switzerland, to Vaduz, Liechtenstein, to the Bahamas took place, led by the U.S. Treasury and the FBI. The targets were two groups of international Hawala banks, Al-Barakat of Mogadishu, Somalia, and Dubai, and Al-Taqwa Trade, Property, and Industry of Vaduz, Liechtenstein, and its bank Al-Taqwa Limited of the Bahamas, and Al-Taqwa Bank of Lugano, Switzerland. Significant to note, in the days immediately after September 11th, when investigation focused on a series of suspicious short trades in the stocks of key airlines and insurance companies such as Swiss Re, certain to be negatively impacted by the World Trade Center attack, Swiss prosecutors investigated the likely role of the Lugano Al-Taqwa Bank using a stock brokerage in Milan. The president of the Al-Taqwa Bank Group is Youssef Mustafa Nada, naturalized Italian, and a member of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood, a note alleged to be connected to CIIR by Sheikh Palazzi. Beginning again, the president of the Al-Taqwa Bank Group is Youssef Mustafa Nada, naturalized Italian, and a member of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood and Jama' al-Islamiyah, or Islamia, which is allied with al-Qaeda through Dr. Ayman al-Zawahiri, said by some intelligence sources to be the brains behind bin Laden. When the Bahamas closed Al-Taqwa Bank Limited early this year, Swiss authorities required a name change in Al-Taqwa Bank, which then became registered in Switzerland as Nada Management Organization S.A. It is the same Al-Taqwa Bank. Now, note the following passage here, again noting Youssef Nada, his connections to the Muslim Brotherhood. Note the Muslim Brotherhood's Islamo-fascist heritage. And note the allegation here that Youssef Nada specifically moved to Saudi Arabia, got into the construction business, made contact with the Saudi royal family, and apparently here worked with Prince Turki, the Saudi intelligence chief, at least indirectly, if not directly. Continuing with this analysis, in 1970, Youssef Nada moved to Saudi Arabia and, with help from the Muslim Brotherhood, established contact with members of the Saudi royal family and founded a construction company in Riyadh, much the same as the bin Laden family. He remained active in Riyadh and soon founded the first Islamic bank in Egypt, the Faisal Bank. The Faisal Islamic Bank of Saudi Arabia is the head bank of a number of affiliated Islamic banks under the name across the Islamic world, from Egypt to Pakistan, to the Emirates, and Malaysia. This last sentence again. The Faisal Islamic Bank of Saudi Arabia is the head bank of a number of affiliated Islamic banks under the name across the Islamic world from Egypt to Pakistan to the Emirates and Malaysia. And again, Youssef Nada, according to this, with help from the Muslim Brotherhood, established contact with members of the Saudi royal family, founded a construction company in Riyadh, rather like the bin Laden family, and helped to found the first Islamic bank in Egypt, the Faisal Bank. Continuing. The head of Faisal Islamic Bank of Saudi Arabia is former Saudi intelligence chief Turki al-Faisal. Faisal Islamic Bank is directly involved in running accounts for bin Laden and his associates and has been named by Luxembourg banking authorities in this regard. And note again some of the allegations that we've looked at in the past, not only vis-a-vis the Muslim Brotherhood, but also the Nada Management Organization. Youssef Nada himself has apparently, connections going all the way back to the World War II period. And I would note that he was alleged to have worked for German intelligence. In the book Dollars for Terror, it is basically alleged. But Youssef Nada is even better known to the Egyptian intelligence services, who have evidence of his membership in the armed branch of the Fraternity of the Muslim Brothers in the 1940s. At that time, according to the same sources, he was working for the Abwehr under Admiral Canaris and took part in a plot against King Farouk. This was not the first time that the path of the Muslim Brothers crossed that of the servants of the Third Reich, unquote. And of the Islamo-fascist nature of the Muslim Brotherhood, we read, taking Italy's choices under Mussolini for inspiration, the economic program, this also from Dollars for Terror, the economic program set three priorities. The social policy foresaw a new law on labor founded on corporations. This economic program would more directly reveal its relationship to totalitarian ideologies a few years later with the works of Mohammad Ghazali. Mohammad Ghazali recommended, quote, an economic regimen similar to that which existed in Nazi Germany and fascist Italy, unquote. The moral code is also an important component in this program, which is intended to create the new Muslim man, unquote. The notion of the equality of the sexes is inherently negated by the concept of the supremacy of male social responsibilities. The, quote, natural, unquote, place of the woman is in the home, unquote. And by way of concluding this discussion, I want to note that this past week there was a very interesting obituary. I don't want to make too much of this. The man was 81 years old, and certainly people die at that age and younger. I would also note, though, he's almost 20 years younger than Strom Thurmond, who allegedly is still alive and certainly is serving in the Senate. This individual is a person whose family, the Thiessens, are a key component of the Bormann organization, and they're the business relationships between the Thiessen family, backers of the Third Reich, and the Bush family go all the way back to the 1920s. We've looked at that in many programs. In particular, Heinrich Thiessen Bornemisza was based in Lugano, Switzerland, as was Youssef Nada. The New York Times of Sunday, April 28th of 2002, had the following obituary by Jonathan Kandel, headlined, Baron Thiessen Bornemisza, industrialist who built fabled art collection, dies at 81. And it notes Baron Bornemisza, and it notes his father, and the fact that he was a backer of Hitler, that he moved to Holland, and note also that his daughter, Francesca, is married to Karl von Habsburg, the scion of the ruling house of Austria, the Habsburgs. This obituary, again, from the San Francisco Chronicle of Sunday, April 28th of 2002, on page 39, Baron Thiessen Bornemisza, industrialist who built fabled art collection, dies at 81. Again, I don't want to make too much of the fact that the man died. 81-year-olds do die. But the timing was very interesting. He died on April 13th, and he was based in Lugano, Switzerland. That is where Nada Management was, and in For the Record 343, among other broadcasts, I speculated that Nada Management and the Muslim Brotherhood were connected to the Bormann Organization and Heinrich Thiessen Bornemisza. That concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 358, Mein Jihad, Part 6, Islamo-Fascism and the Wahhabi Lobby. This has been recorded on May 6th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery.